Axon, editor of IWC's Urgent Communications, and today I'm speaking with Scott Gordon of Polaris Wireless. Scott, thanks for taking the time to speak with us.
Oh, thank you for having me on today.
Well, it's been an interesting time and in the wireless industry in general, and in particular in the 911 world, where all PSAPs are trying to find the exact location to as close as possible of a 911 caller, so that they can dispatch people in the quickest way possible to help those folks. Tell us a little bit about what is the status today, and I keep hearing things about Z-axis. How does that play into things?
Yeah, there's been a real a major change sort of in the E911 space since the fourth report and order, which I think was 2015, where it was issued by the FCC. And at that time, you know, the focus really had been on outdoor location. And, you know, as people more and more adopt the use of cell phones as their primary device, the FCC recognized that, you know, we can't just mandate location in outdoor spaces. We need to focus on indoors because more and more times the calls that they receive are indoors, the PSAPs. So as a product of that, you know, they've written some new rules. And one of those is that the location systems now need to locate people indoors with a certain level of accuracy in XY, but also, you know, in urban spaces where you have tall buildings and people can be on the 30th floor of a big structure, you got to be able to locate them in the Z-axis as well. So the reason for this is primarily the product of people using their cell phones in indoor spaces. And because of that, the location vendors like ourselves, Polaris Wireless, have to design products to deliver a Z-axis.
All right. Well, it's certainly the need for public safety to have that Z-axis is a tremendous one, but how do you do it?
Yeah, there's a couple different techniques one can use. You know, you need measurements from the device that provide some meaningful Z-axis information. You know, nominally you can look at something like GPS. But if you look at GPS satellites and how they, you know, orbit and what kind of geometry they provide to a location system, it's pretty poor. And further, you know, when you're indoors, GPS is often denied. You don't, because of the structure of the building, you've got, you know, concrete floors, which GPS has a very difficult time penetrating. You oftentimes, most of the times, you won't even get a GPS lock. So you have to seek alternatives. One alternative would be to use Wi-Fi. You know, lots of buildings are equipped with Wi-Fi access points on each of the floors. So Wi-Fi could potentially provide a part of the solution. And the other thing you could potentially use is barometric pressure. As we all know, barometric pressure is going to change based on the height of the device. Basically, it works by measuring the weight of the air column that sits above you. So as the device moves up, that air column becomes lighter. And most devices today, at least in the U.S., most smartphones are equipped with these sensors. So it's another mechanism one can use to locate somebody in the Z-axis. What we do at Polaris is we fuse everything. So we'll take any information that the device will provide us in order to estimate Z. We call this a hybrid location system. So if Wi-Fi is available and we have a Wi-Fi database, we'll use that along with barometric pressure. And in some cases, GPS might be mildly useful. But what we do is combine all of these things in a single monolithic location algorithm. And it's robust in that it takes the confidence that we have in each of these measurements and weights them accordingly, and that's how we compute the axis for a device.
All right. Wow. And so in terms of barometric pressure, the sun is shining, and I'm in a building, I would assume that the barometric pressure as I go up each floor, is is fairly predictable. But, you know, obviously we're talking about using this for 911 purposes, and when, frankly, things don't, a lot of times aren't normal. You know, if I'm calling from a room that's maybe, you know, near fire, or a window's been bashed open or something, does that alter the barometric pressure at all, or is it still within a range that gives me an accurate reading?
Yeah, there's a lot of impairments one needs to take into account when you're using barometric pressure. Those are sort of extreme scenarios, but sure. there's more mundane things too, right? You watch the weather on the news in the evening, and they say there's a low pressure system or there's a high pressure system coming through your area, and those change the ambient conditions. And so, just naively using the barometric pressure on your device isn't going to work. In fact, you have to have some reference as to what the current barometric pressure is at some elevation. Usually they report it at sea level, but you need to have that information to compensate for the current weather conditions. Otherwise, trying to estimate an absolute altitude from your barometric pressure sensor is simply not going to work. So you got to have a weather reference network, and we provide that. We use our own stations along with public stations that exist at like airports and the like. Secondly, you know, each of these sensors has a unique characteristic associated with them when they come off the manufacturing line that needs to be accounted for. You have a bias, essentially. So even though you might correctly compensate for the current weather, you also have to compensate for this bias. And you need to estimate that quantity over time. It does drift a little bit, but not so quickly that it can't be estimated. So we have some good algorithms to estimate the bias of the sensor itself. If you don't do that, you could also have a 20 plus meter error. And lastly, as you alluded to, there's also building effects. Not just fires and the like, but there's a thing called stack effect where, again, the barometric pressure is measuring the air column above you, and the weight of that air column is a function of things like temperature and humidity and stuff like that. And of course, in building, that temperature may be different than outside, and that's where you get this thing called stack effect. So if it's going to be more magnified in a case where you have a big differential between the indoor and outdoor temperature. So we've done some testing in Alaska to test our algorithms to handle the stack effect. And so we've got some good ways to compensate for these factors that we think is, sort of best in industry. But for fires, open windows and stuff like that, yeah, that will affect the altitude, measurement to a certain extent. And that's also why we hybridize our platform, so that we're not just relying on barometric pressure. We have other measurements that we can also leverage to hopefully provide a more robust overall location system.
Okay. Well, and so how accurate can this be?
So we like to tout that we can get floor level accuracy, and we've demonstrated that in the testing that we've done with CTIA, which for a commercial building, we say a floor is about 3 meters. So when we did the CTI testing, maybe I should take a step back and describe what CTI testing is. CTI, as part of the fourth report in order, the carriers agreed to set up a test bed. And so this test bed was intended to test carriers and vendors' location platforms. And there's been a number of different stages. There's stage one, stage two, stage Z, and other stages as well of this test bed, where they take, current technologies and new technologies, emerging technologies, and put them through very rigorous tests that, are strictly indoors. And so we participated in stage two, which was primarily just looking at XY performance, but more recently we participated in stage Z. And so the testing that was done for Stage Z was done in San Francisco, Atlanta, and Chicago. And Chicago was selected because the weather tends to be a little more extreme there, and barometric pressure-based solutions, as we discussed, can suffer some impairments because of that. So we tested in those those three markets from you know by an independent third party, and our results were 2.8 meters 80% of the time. And you'll find those results in our commentary. You know, the actual results reported by CTIA were not quite that good, but that's a product of some of the ways that they configured the test. And when we went back and we said, well, if it was configured this way and we had an independent third party verify that what we did to accommodate those testing irregularities, that it was sound and valid, that our 2.8 meters stand, and nobody's really challenged it. So we're firmly confident that we can do under 3 meters 80% of the time.
Okay. All right. And being under 3 meters means, hey, I should have the right floor at least, correct?
Yeah. 80% of the time, we should get you nailed to the right floor. Exactly.
Okay. And today, it's, hey, I have an XY that, frankly, may not be all that great, and I have no idea what floor they're on this 50-story building, right?
Yeah, if you look at the current performance of operators, and I know they've been migrating to newer solutions, but many of the operators that have 911 systems, they all have 911 systems, but they might not even get you in the right building for XY. That's correct.
Right. Well, so, and does this actually help the XY? And frankly, will it also help out my outdoor location as well?
Well, maybe not so much outdoor. Our hybrid algorithm helps outdoors, no mm-hmm. question. We do XY as well. The Z component, though, maybe isn't as critical outdoors, but it does help indoors. We do some clever things basically use building information to basically provide a higher confidence that you're in the building and in the right building. So we do leverage Z to a certain extent to aid and improve the XY location.
Okay. And I know you're talking about the barometric pressure here. Is this something where, as more and more sensors get put into these phones, that is the structure of the Polaris solution such that as we get more sensors, that you could actually add in some of that stuff if that might help?
Yes. So there's the 911 use case where you're sort of limited to what the standards can deliver you as far as measurements are concerned. So you 3GPP, which defines LTE, it's the standards body that defines LTE and 5G and UMTS. They have a certain protocol that goes between the location server and the device itself. And that protocol is limited to, you know, a certain number of measurements. You can today send Wi-Fi and barometric pressure and a few other things, GPS, over that interface. But it's not extended to new measurements like that might come on a device. That being said, so the 911 use case may be somewhat limited. We do have technology that would be not targeted for the 911 use case, but more for public safety. In that case, we can design our own protocols and get whatever measurements might be on the device and use our location platform in that way. So when I say public safety, I mean applications that firefighters and police and whomever else are in that space would use on a device that they use in the course of their daily work.
Well, locating firefighters is, you know, one of the top priorities of FirstNet and, frankly, almost everyone in public safety. How far away are you guys from being able to have something that you think is going to be helpful there?
Yeah, I think the product we have today that we're continually evolving is ready for prime time. The coming quarter, we expect to announce some partnerships And then the subsequent quarters, we should be in the deployment phase of starting to serve that community.
Wow. Well, I know an awful lot of people are very anxious to see that in the public safety world. Getting back to the 911 situation, I guess, what do you see happening going forward, and kind of what's the timetable until we start to see this technology actually get used by live callers and
police apps? Yeah, that's a good question. I think the E911 industry is still a big question mark. The FCC is still taking public comment on what the rules should be. They have not even announced what the Z-axis rules were. Just let me clarify that. The XY rules are well understood, but what requirements are going to be in place for the carriers as far as delivering Z accuracy is concerned? You know, the carriers are continually doing testing. There's another element called the NEAD that they've completed testing, or they're still testing. I'm not sure what the status is of that, to be honest, but it's basically a Wi-Fi database that they'll have access to provide dispatchable address. Whether or not that works, we'll see. But that would be one of the inputs the carriers will use to decide on which technology to move forward with, whether that works well or not. But I think the biggest thing today is the FCC still needs to make a rule on what carriers need to comply with. And once that's done, then I think we'll start seeing, what solutions are adopted.
Okay. Well, and so just so we're clear, are the carriers required to use whatever comes out of this test bed, or do they still have some wiggle room?
Well, I think it's an input to the FCC for rulemaking is what the test bed is basically. That's the task of the test bed, is to provide input to the FCC for new rules. The only rule that exists today for Z-axis is that the carriers must deliver basically barometric pressure, the measurement itself, back to the network. So there's not and it's only for devices that have barometric pressure, of course, too. So the rule right now is pretty loose. There's no stringent requirement on the carriers to provide any sort of accuracy. But the FCC recently wrote, a rule for comment that it would be 5 meters, but public safety is pushing back on that. The carriers, of course, would like to see that because it would be easy for them to comply with. But again, the rule isn't written in stone yet, so we'll see what it ultimately is. And again, I think when that happens, then we'll see it's going to drive what solutions ultimately the carriers adopt. If it's 5 meters, there might be several solutions that can meet that. If it's 3 meters, maybe there's only one or two solutions that can meet that.
All right. Well, it's going to be fascinating to watch, and I know we're going to keep an eye on it. Scott, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks again for having me. I really enjoyed it.
All right.